John Richardsville 9. Just a few more questions, John. Did you ever find out what happened to your little siblings, your brother and your sister and
yes,
your mother?
I did, actually. It took me a long time. All the time I was in the service, I wrote to the International Red Cross Tracing Service. Nothing could be found whatsoever. Now, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, I've got the letters in my briefcase here. Suddenly I wrote to the International Tracing Service again, in Germany. And I had a letter back saying, my mother, my brother, and sister were taken, were arrested by the secret police, taken to Theresienstadt, and from there they went to Auschwitz. And that is the last what is known of them. I tried to trace my uncle, I tried to trace my father, but nothing was heard of them. I keep, even to the present day, getting letters from the Red Cross saying they cannot trace my father. My oldest son, who is a sergeant in the Wiltshire Police, said to me one day, why don't you write to the Simon Institute? Which I did. A letter came back saying that my father was arrested in October 1939 and arrested and taken to a place in Poland called Mieszko. What happened to him, nobody seems to know. Now, if my sister had informed me about the letter she had had from the International Red Cross, wherever, it would have been so much easier for me. But it's only when my sister died 3 years ago that the letter came into my hands. And I then realised, because, you see, what I didn't know at the time even, my father wrote to my sister and said he gave my uncles that went to South America some money to help to get him out of Vienna, because he had been helping them, he'd helped other people. And he said, well, if I give you some money now, you can help me. Now, if they had done this, he would still be alive today. But unfortunately, that money that he passed over to them, they used to get a personal friend of theirs out. Now, a few years ago, 20 years ago, I met, no more than that even, 1960-something it was, 30 years ago, I met one of my uncles from South America. And he phoned me up at home in England. He was in Germany with my brother. And he said to my wife, because he spoke English, let your husband come out, I will repay his fare. Unfortunately, he was the same con artist as he was in those years, all of them when my father died. I went out there, but he never repaid me the fare. I had to borrow the money from my sister to get back home. What happened to Uncle Arnold? I cannot trace him. Auntie Gertrude, she came to England, as I said. I hadn't heard from her for several years. I tried to trace her just recently because I put an advert in the ADR magazine. Someone wrote to me and said, the last I heard of her, and Hertha Koronek, which is my grandmother's single name, that was her brother's daughter, they lived in Cheltenham. I put an advert in the Cheltenham newspaper to try and trace him. Someone wrote to me saying they knew of Gertrude, she got married, they had a son, he was in the Cheltenham police. I tried to contact a person through the Cheltenham police authority. I had a phone call from this gentleman who is an inspector. He said he would think about it and let me know. And that is the last I heard. So really, I am the only one left of my family, because my brother died 4 years ago of cancer in Germany. I've got a nephew out there with the name of Reschnitzer, but I'm the only one actually of my father who's alive. I am the youngest of the family, but I'm the only one, and the young, well, and the young of the original, because they're not my first stepbrother, but they are all dead anyway.
Do any of your own children or grandchildren bring back your family to you?
Yes. You see, now, my oldest daughter got married late in life. And when my other members of my family, my children got married, I was so very ill. As you can imagine, I had a heart condition. I was on a lot of tablets to keep me alive. And to be honest, they were there. I didn't have the patience with them. And they're my grandchildren. I love them, yes. But my daughter Janet, who got married, and she's got a little boy, Stephen. And when I sit him on my lap, he looks at me, the way he smiles at me, I very often think of my little brother. Now, Stephen and I can't describe it as a bond between us. As I said, I love my grandchildren, but there's a bond between my grandson and I, and my little granddaughter Jane, that I never had with any of the other grandchildren. There's another granddaughter called Kerry. Now there again is a different bond, because after Kerry was born, about 30 seconds after, because I was in hospital with my daughter, I held her in my arms. She still had an umbilical cord on me. So really, I am lucky in a sense, because I've been very ill, I've had a heart operation, I've been given a second chance in life. And also, I've been given a second chance to have three smashing grandchildren. Not to say the others aren't smashing, but there is a different bond between them to what there is with the other ones. Because the other ones, because I was so ill, I couldn't hug them, I couldn't love them, I couldn't nurse them. Now these three I have nursed. And there's a different type of bond. I don't know if you can understand what I'm getting at. And I've had a second chance in life. And I'm so grateful, because if it wasn't for this glorious country of England, Britain, I might not be here today. I might not have this lovely family. I've got 12 grandchildren. And I'm such a lucky man.
Do you think, John, that going through what you went through and being separated from your parents and your family, do you think it made a difference to the way you behaved towards your own children at all?
Well, let's put it in the right perspective. I've always been brought up in a kind of an orphanage. Now, I've always been taught discipline. I love my children. I love them very much. I'm very happy, lucky to have them. But I was a disciplinarian. I cannot tolerate rudeness. And I cannot tolerate bad manners. And I cannot tolerate bad timekeeping. Now, my children know this, and many times they have said to me, "Father, you were a hard taskmaster, but you never bore malice. If I punish one of my children, I punish them, and then it's forgotten, and I treated them as normal. There was no, you get to the room after I punished them, and keep it on like a lot of modern people do today. I punished them, and it was finished, but they knew if I punished them, they weren't allowed to do it again. And that's how I went. That was me.
Because you had throughout, you know, this experience you've described, a lot of what you perceived of as injustice, didn't you, from those priests?
There was a lot of that. And as I said, I always try to listen to both sides of what was being said when my children got in the room. Now, my second oldest son, Bob, there are sort of relations to my wife. One of the sons called him a Nazi, if I may use a terminology, bastard. So my Bob is a bit of a wily one. He's the big chief of the family, you know. He's got a good heart, he's kind-hearted, but he's like I used to be, I think, he's always in trouble. Now this particular time, when Leslie called him that name, he nearly buried him up to his neck in sand, and he was going to kill him. Now, they came to me and said, hold me out. Of course, I had to dig him out. Now, I took Bob home, I punished him, but went over to his father and told him why he'd done it. And the words were that my wife is an orphan because her mother died, her father didn't want to bring her up, and the lady he married afterwards, her mother brought my wife up. See? So the woman that he married was the daughter of the lady that brought my wife up. Now when I went over the scene, he wasn't interested. He said, well, what do you expect? You see, when I met my wife, I was still called Freshmanson. But because the prejudice of that was going at the time, especially after war, and it was some areas stronger than others, which you must agree, my wife asked me, because of my children, to change my name. And the nearest I could get to was Richards. So I changed my name. But you see, the family still let it out where I came from, and of course, the animosity occurred. In fact, there was a time, as I said to you, when I was working, somebody called me this, and I chased him on air.
What did he call you?
Called me a German bastard. You know, it's not a word I like to use, but for the context of this interview, I've got to say it. And that's it, I chased him on air. But then afterwards, when I became severely ill, I joined the hospital, and we were good friends. So, what can you do? Life must go on. You can't bear animosity to everybody. I think, yes, it grieves me. Even as I've told you today, I think about it, I weep at times. Maybe because I'm a very emotional person, I don't know. It hurts me, it twists me up inside. But then, Austria is my home.
Is that so? You still feel home is Austria?
Put it this way, you know, like Kennedy said, ich bin ein Berliner. Now, we got a saying in Vienna, ich bin ein Wiener, which means I'm a Viennese. Inside myself, I feel, and when I go to the mountains, to this rural, I feel there's a weight lifting off my mind. Because, mind you, the Tirol has always been a happy childhood to me, because I used to go there, see, on convalescence holidays, when I was a little boy. My family like Austria. I feel more at home in Austria than I do in Germany, and I have spent a lot of time there. And as I said earlier, we know what has happened. But obviously, I'm not kept an old man. You can't condemn the younger generation of what the older generation did. They are trying to make their amends, really. So, yes, let's bear in mind what has happened to us. But at the same time, let's try and live together, like Menschen, as we say in Austria, like human beings. Let's live together. Let's be together like brothers and sisters. Because basically, we all come from Adam and Eve. And literally, whether it's a long distance off, we are all brothers and sisters. Let's try and live together. I wish, you know, I sometimes listen to the news. And I feel so very sad. At the moment, we've got all this trouble in Albania, Abyssinia, as it used to be called. this is where Hitler and Italy tried out all the machines before the war, didn't they, in Abyssinia? I don't think many people remember this. You see, history, for me, has always been a subject I've studied and I've lived with it and I've remembered it. It's happening there, it happened in Bosnia. It happened even, it's happening now in Bulgaria again, where they're getting, they're fighting each other, the communists. Let's try and live together in a peaceful world. Let's have a coexistence. Why should we? Maybe when I'm dead and gone, and maybe if there is a life after, I'm above and I can look down and I can see this coexistence. Because honestly thinking, honestly, when I think about all the grandchildren, I don't want them to be brought up in a world which is evil. We've gone through all this, we don't want to go through it again, do we? Sorry, I'm on.
Well, John, thank you very much indeed. I've kept you here a long time today and it's been very interesting and I'm sure most emotionally demanding for you, but thank you very much indeed. Thank you.